On today's episode, we are joined by athletic performance coach at Azle High School, Coach Monty Sparkman. This is Monty's third time on the podcast. It's always a pleasure and a joy to have him on. Monty and I dive into high school powerlifting, the meat and potatoes of it, geared lifting, training as a team, programming your training for powerlifting, and more. Monty is a longtime powerlifter in both single and multi-ply lifting, having amassed 2,000-pound totals multiple times, 1,000-pound squat, 600-plus-pound bench press, and 600-plus-pound deadlift. Safe to say he knows what he's talking about. Monty has also coached powerlifting in a variety of capacities. If you love powerlifting, or are a powerlifting coach or a high school powerlifter, this is the episode for you. Make sure to follow Monty on social media and check him out on Instagram and Twitter at Monty Sparkman. Before we jump into today's episode, just a few housekeeping things. Remember to follow the show on Twitter at HWCN Podcast. Share this episode or any that you find value in. Don't forget to rate and review to help grow the show. We appreciate those 5-star reviews. If you're in the Dallas area needing some fantastic custom cookies that look almost too good to eat, check out Texas Treaties. If you're trying to step up your menswear game, check out Etiquette Dawn. That's truly custom apparel that will have you looking like a sharp-dressed man. If you need coffee that works as hard as you do or is as strong as your squat, bench, or deadlift, check out Viking Coffee Company. Use the code COFFEE with Noonan for a 10% discount on single purchases. If you're looking for a quick and effective way to keep your weight room or locker room or even your office or classroom sanitized, check out Zanago Sprayer. Check out www.zanago.com or follow them on social media. Let them know Coach Noonan sent you for a discount. Enjoy today's episode with Coach Monty Sparkman. On today's episode of the Hanging with Coach Noonan podcast, we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the now part of the illustrious 3-time episode club, Mr. Monty Sparkman. My brother, what's happening, man?
What's up, Noonan, man? Hey, 3 times. That's pretty special, I guess.
Yeah. So,
appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me on, man. It's always good to chop it up a little bit, and I'm excited to talk about something that has been a big part of my life. So let's do it, man.
Let's do it, man. So people are probably going to guess it has to do with lifting, but we're going to specifically talk about powerlifting. We're going to touch a little bit more directly to the high school as it is powerlifting season in the state of Texas. Now that football is over and, you know, track will start up soon, you know, so my first question to you, and you alluded to it earlier, is what does the sport of powerlifting mean to you?
Yeah, we could probably do a whole episode on that, man. but really, it means everything to me. It's really where I found myself. It's where I found my wife. It's where developed a lot of great friends. You know, it's my niche in the strength community. And without it, you know, I really don't think that I'd be anywhere close to where I am today, which still really isn't that big of a deal. But yeah, man, without powerlifting, I'd probably just be another average dude.
You humble yourself and sell yourself a little short, man. You definitely more than just a meathead powerlifter, but understandably, right, we all kind of get entered into the world of strength and through a variety of doors. And so the pathway through powerlifting, I think for many coaches, not just you and not just me, is a likelihood one, just because if you don't necessarily have a really good strength coach at some point in your playing career, whether it's high school or college, you know, you get introduced either through powerlifting, through bodybuilding, or through Olympic weightlifting. You know, so powerlifting itself is one of those deals where, you know, you can do it for a long time. Obviously, it does take a toll on your body, but, you know, it's always a fun venture to see just, you know, how much you can lift and, you know, manipulating gear to help yourself so you can stay lifting longer?
Well, you know, powerlifting is one of those things that really is at the genesis of a lot of performance programs. And what I mean by that is, you know, early on when I was in high school and even beyond, the first thing that could be measured was max strength. And that's why I think it's still relevant today in a lot of programs, is because that's the roots that the coaches have. You know, that was the first metric for a lot of programs, is how much can you lift? And I'll be the first one to tell you that lifting a lot of weight doesn't mean you're athletic. It probably means quite the opposite. And, but for me, you know, what powerlifting did was it really allowed me to have, you know, a little bit of success because I wasn't athletic and so that was an arena where I could have success. And I think for a lot of kids, you know, that's what gets them hooked into, you know, to tie it back to strength conditioning or whatever. That's what gets them hooked into your program is getting stronger, seeing a little bit of muscles and you know, seeing that number go up. But I think you run into trouble when that becomes the only thing you hang your hat on. You know, when maximal strength is the, maybe not the only identifier, but the identifier that you hold in the highest priority. Because, you know, I've said this before, you know, we know guys, you know, who were really, really strong, who couldn't play a lick. And then we know guys who couldn't, you know, bench press the bar, who were really, really good players. And so you have to be careful. But I think the reason that powerlifting is important is because, you know, it is in its root kind of at the genesis of where we all started. You know, I think it's important to remember that.
No doubt, man. You know, and you think about some of the, you know, premier power lifters and the premier powerlifting coaches, so much of their mentality and their, you know, the way in which they programmed it, did things, has been adapted for not just max strength improvement and increase, but athletic performance. You know, so much of what Louis did at Westside has been molded into not just powerlifting, but athletic performance, right? The conjugate method and the different machines, right? You know, the glute ham and, you know, belt squatting and box squatting, things like that. And he may not always have been the inventor of it, but he helped promote and bring those things to light that not necessarily everybody else knew about.
Well, you know, he talked about all the time that he didn't invent toilet paper, but he's smart enough to use it, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, yeah, you know, we're not always creating and being innovative in the weight room. You know, people are quick to say that nothing new, you know, is around in strength conditioning. And to some extent, that's true, you know, but I think the great ones are able to take a specific exercise, machine, drill, whatever, and make it applicable and applicable to their situation to then get results, whether that's maximal strength, whether that's field of play. But, you know, we also have to remember, and this is where I think people miss the boat, is maximal strength is just one piece. It's one piece to the puzzle. It's not the whole puzzle. It's one piece. But it's the easiest and simplest piece. You know, I've said this, that in our setting, in a high school setting, the easiest thing to do is get a kid stronger. I mean, our kids are going to walk into the weight room, touch a bar, and get stronger just because that's where they are biologically. That's where they are. That's where they are developmentally, you know. And in some settings, that works. In some programs, in some, you know, states, geographically, whatever, having a stronger team will equate to success.
Yeah.
Got to remember that shouldn't be the end goal. It should just be a small piece of a more holistic type program.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But speaking more specifically for powerlifting and the high school powerlifting setting, right? Obviously, we want to look at maximal strength, right? We want to figure out how to get our totals up and try to win and get to regionals and state. For most kids, some kids, you know, they realize they're not there yet for those lofty aspirations, but they just want to get stronger and want to be able to compete better in their weight class. So for those, for that mindset, that kind of team setting, where is it that you would suggest or direct coaches to kind of look at from a programming standpoint, as the season kind of, you know, has already kind of kicked off in terms of the training, but the competition season will, you know, really kick up and kick off in January?
Well, you know, let's make a delineation first, because I think you have to have this separation in that you have powerlifting programs that are glorified extensions of the football offseason program. And then you have actual coaches who care about the sport and who are trying to create the best power lifters as a sport that you can have. Okay. So there's two different groups there, but I still think when you're talking about programming that simpler is always going to be better. You know, again, with our population, we don't have to get fancy. You know, adding 5 or 10 pounds a week to the bar is going to be sufficient for 99% of the lifters that we deal with. And I would even argue even the freaks at our level. I mean, and Texas high school powerlifting has had some freaks. You know, you've had 1,000 pound squatter. You know, you've had 600-700 pound benchers, 700-pound deadlifters. You go to the state powerlifting meet and there are some really, really gifted people walking around. But even then, I would argue that their training isn't complex. It's getting really, really skilled in the equipment. And this is, I'm going to tangent a little bit right now. You know, that if you're going to be a good high school powerlifter in Texas, it is a sport of geared lifting. You have to know how to use a gear. The great ones out there, unless you're just genetically gifted, understand the intricacies of wearing a squat suit, of how to wrap your knees a certain way, of what bench shirt to get, how to wear that bench shirt, where to put the sleeves, how to wear your belt, how to take a hand off, how to breathe, how to walk it out, how to hold it out, how to do all those things to maximize the amount of weight that they can lift. And so that really goes hand in hand, if not above, the programming. Because you got to remember, you know, the goal, you know, Hoff talks about, I'm not trying to lift, you know, raw weights, or I'm trying to lift the biggest weight. And that's high school powerlifting in Texas. It's you're trying to lift the biggest weight. And so, you know, you have to give those athletes a chance to do that by coaching them on the geared aspect of it. I think the worst thing you can do as a high school coach is have gear and then the day of or the week of the meet, hey, go find a bench shirt that fits or a squat suit that fits, put it on and let's go compete. I mean, you're not doing those kids a service by doing that, because they're going to be competing against kids that know what they're doing or have a coach that knows what they're doing. And so if you're taking kids to meets and they're competing, then you owe it to them to learn the sport. If it's an extension of your off season, then run it how you would in your off season, you know, but don't set those kids up to fail by not giving them the best chance to succeed, because every coach out there is going to buy the best helmet, the best shoulder pads, the best football, the best jerseys they can, because they want their kids to be successful. And so, and so that needs to happen in powerlifting also.
I agree with you. You know, we broke out the gear pretty much from day one. But I still kind of had kids earn gear, in the sense of, if I didn't think that you were serious and you were going to come consistently, I wanted you to show up on a day-to-day basis before I give you the gear, especially if you are possibly the same size as somebody else who's already showing up being consistent. You know, I inherited a program that has a good supply of gear, but not everybody has that you know, not everybody's blessed with that. I think we got tagged in a tweet not too long ago. Some guy had all his gear, you know, hung up on the racks and things in the weight room, and it looked like, you know, the department store. You just go shop, find what you need, and that's great. But it takes, and I think he said it too, it takes a long time to acquire all of that. But that's somebody who cares about powerlifting as a sport and not just an extension of off season, right?
Yeah. And if you go back to that tweet and you look at that equipment, and this isn't a knock, so I'm just going to stop there. But what I'll say is, unfortunately, I mean, 100%. Unfortunately, I'm not promoting this. I'm not endorsing this. It just is what it is. Powerlifting as a gear sport is an arms race.
And hell yeah!
You know what I mean by that is, you could have two kids of same strength, and you put one in an Enzer Blast shirt, and you put one in a tricked out F8 or a tricked out Katana, and that kid's going to win every time. And that's the downfall of where the sport is today. And, you know, if you know me, you know my background is gear lifting. I love gear lifting. I still try to dabble in it today. So this isn't a knock against gear lifting. But right now, it's a uneven playing field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, it's awesome. If you've got a closet full of shirts and suits, and I think you're 100% right. You don't put them in it. You don't put the freshman in a suit day one. You don't put the guy that shows up part time in a suit.
Yeah.
You know, that should be a reward. It should be a badge of merit in your program. You know, I'm 100% on board with earning things. I don't think kids should be given anything. But I also think, again, you know, you owe it to your kids to try to improve the quality of the equipment that you have. And again, I know it goes back to budgets. I know it goes back to resources, and not everybody has that. I get that. But I think you got to find a way to reward that senior who's been there for 4 years, get him a new squat suit.
Oh, yeah.
Get him, you know, the newest bench shirt. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you're going to be able to outfit 10 weight classes, 2D, boys and girls. That's not what I'm saying. But I think you owe it to your top lifters to find a way to level that playing field somehow.
No doubt. Well, you know, and even not just necessarily rewarding the four, you know, that senior that's been there, but the freshman that you see potential in that is showing a lot of interest, right? Help them, you know, get it. Like we have a girl, who's very talented, and we have a freshman boy that's very talented. And so to me, I want to put them in gear soon, and they're already in gear now, but I want them in gear because I want that hook set in, you know, and I want them to want to be successful. And then as they progress, yes, either one of two things is going to happen. Either I'm going to steer them towards purchasing their own gear, and we can go through the school system and get a discount that way so they're not having to pay, you know, retail price, or we'll just, you know, fundraise and use the money, and they're going to be the beneficiaries of the next and best over the next 4 years. So, but I, in my case, I don't have very many seniors either. I have one senior. He's a tweener, and I want to talk about, you know, making that decision about, you know, going up or down in a weight class here in a little bit. But, you know, for him, we have gear for him. To your point, thankfully for me, I'm able to take care of that young man. Whereas the majority of my team is young, a lot of freshmen, sophomores, and some juniors. So, you know, those better kids are going to get the better pick of what gear I have, and then, you know, we'll trickle down.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I think the gear has to reflect the commitment level, but also the experience level of the lifter. Yeah, you know, like if you're going to put your freshman in a loose suit, a loose bench shirt, so they get a feel, so they get some support and understand. Yeah, 100%. You know, 100% do that. Like, I think that's really, really good. You know, but just like you said, like, your better lifters or your far, that's not even say better, let's just say varsity. Yeah. You know, your varsity kids that you're trying to get them to state should have the best chance to do that equipment wise that you can give them as a program.
Yeah.
And if that happens to be a freshman, then that happens to be a freshman, you know? But I also think as a coach, you know, that's the cool thing about powerlifting is you can put the gear on too.
Yeah.
And
I did today.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the cool thing about it. And I don't know that I'm advocating, you know, every coach who coaches powerlifting to go jump in a bench shirt or squat suit, but I do think that you need to know how to coach the gear.
Yeah.
Coaching the gear is no different than playing a down block. Coaching the gear is no different than teaching hurdle technique, than teaching, you know, a zone defense. Like, it's the same thing. It's a part of the sport. But I think it's overlooked and it's trivialized. Because coaches just don't know.
Yeah, it's go put that on and
figure it out, right?
Figure it out, yeah.
And try not to kill yourself or your partners.
Yeah. I'll say, you know, I was looking some stuff up the other day. You know, because for me, in high school as a powerlifter, I was horrible. And we didn't have gear. And I can tell you, like, putting me in gear would have been absolutely worthless. It wouldn't have given me any more or less advantage. I was horrible. So, you know, my knowledge of that is not as high necessarily compared to other coaches.
Yeah, but you'll also pick up the phone and reach out.
Exactly.
Video and say, hey, what about this?
Yeah.
And that's where I think coaches miss the boat, whether it's ego or otherwise, is they don't want to admit that there's better information out there.
Yeah. And that was the deal. As I was looking for some videos specifically with, like, the Bench Daddy shirts, you know, a lot of that stuff is old. It's not as recent with the how to's. Like, even with Titan, a lot of their videos on how to's are old. So it's almost like,
yeah, because it's always evolving, right?
Yeah,
you know, it's always changing. I was listening, Wes, I just put out a new Louis question and answer. And somebody asked, you know, should I do it this way as you wrote it in the Book of Methods compared to what you're saying now? And, you know, his answer was, you know, that was 13 years ago. You know, the information has changed. Hopefully you drive a newer car than 13 years, you know, than 13 years old, you know. That's that's where you got to keep up with the sport, you know, and maybe, you know, there may not be a video out there, but maybe there's somebody out there you can reach out to. Maybe yeah. there's somebody out there that you can say, hey, I'm having this issue with this shirt. I see you're wearing it. And 9 times out of 10, if you DM a lifter on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or whatever, 9 times out of 10, they're going to respond.
Yeah.
You're going to have those people who are going to say, go to my Patreon and pay this and do that. But 9 times out of 10, if you say, hey, man, I'm having this issue. I see you wear this. Can you help me? They're going to help you out. I mean, this is the age of information. So.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to take advantage of it.
And I liked, Kevin Pittman over at Anderson Powerlifting. You know, I screenshotted you the email I sent him, like, you know, comparing knee wraps. And he gave me a great, you know, breakdown of what they have, but then offered what he likes, right? And then I can take that information that he gave me, ask you, and then I can ultimately make the best decision for my kids.
Well, you know? and the reason we can do that is because we've both competed and worn the gear. You know, Kevin's an 800 plus squatter. And I think he did it at like 90 years old, you know. So funny story about Kevin. Kevin and I actually were in grad school together, you know, way back when, 20 years ago. And so I've known Kevin a long time. I've known Ken, and we'll just make a plug right now. I'm just going to plug Anderson Powerlifting. You know, if you're not using them as your powerlifting provider, you know, I really invite you to do that, because their products, number one, are amazing. The service is second to none. And, you know, they're just really, really good people. You know, Ken would come to our gym and just roll in a big old duffel bag out of the back of his car and just open the duffel bag up and say, hey, you know, start trying stuff on and you know, find what works. And it's no different, you know, luckily that part of it, you know, we had access to, but it's no different than kids putting on shoulder pads or kids putting on a helmet, you know, right? You've got 100 helmets and 200 shoulder pads, and you're going to find the best fit. You know, we just have to figure out how to do that from a powerlifting standpoint. You know what I mean? But going back to Kevin's email and that whole side of it, yeah, you know, the reason he can give you that information, you know, the reason I give the information is because I use it. Like, you asked me about those wraps. I'm like, yeah, dude, I got them right here. I love them. You know, and I've used the other ones, and they're a little bit, you know, more heavy duty, maybe not the best, but you can have that with powerlifting, because it's not something that you age out of. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to go put on a helmet and say, yeah, I like the Zenith or the Shud or whatever compared to this other helmet, because I'm not going to wear a helmet again. Yeah. Or I like the Z-Cool shoulder pads compared to whatever, you know, like, I'm not going to do that, but I can tell you the difference between an Enzer Phenom, a Super Duper Phenom, a Titan Fury, a Titan F6, a Katana, Super Katana, a F8, a double F8. I can tell you all those differences because I've worn them. And I think that's the cool thing about powerlifting, is you can have that experience.
So, you know, one of the things that I like, you know, have told my kids and the places that I've been, and I think that this part gets kind of misunderstood, but like overlooked, is at some point it's you versus the weight on the platform, right? You're kind of solo, but there's a team aspect to powerlifting in the training that I think doesn't always get highlighted enough. You know, you read the stories and watch the videos of everybody at Westside and, you know, over at Elite FTS, like, yeah, you may lift alone from time to time, but there's just something different when you're training with other people trying to do basically the same thing you're doing relative to their weight class or their strength. So for us, you know, yes, we want to have those individual accolades, but you know, I want to win team awards as well. I want, you know, regional team championship, state team championship. Like, those would be aspirations for me because one, we're going to have, it means you got to have multiple people. So you're already going to get the individual, but two, collectively, when you're just bringing a whole squad to a meet and everybody's going to, you know, do great and do big things, like it's just kind of a different mindset. It's just it presents a different atmosphere. And I think when you're training with a group of people in like mindset, it totally changes what you can do or how you may feel even just that day.
Yeah, no, you're touching on maybe the most important component to really team sports, and not just powerlifting, but team sports in general, is you got to have great teammates. And you have to have, like you said, like-minded people who are on the same mission as you. You know, Tony Holler talks about burn your goals and go on mission, right? And that is probably the number one aspect of success that great teams have. You know, you hear all the time talk about what a great teammate Tom Brady is. You know, Michael Jordan maybe wasn't the best teammate, but he brought everybody else up with him, you know, from that standpoint. You know, Louie and Dave and those guys talk about at Westside, you know, the goal of the training partner is to make everybody else stronger than they are. And so if everybody else is trying to make everybody else better, then that's, you're only going to have success. You know, when I look back on some of my better lifts and better meets, man, we had a tremendous group of guys and girls around. At Berg Burnett, at Askew's, you know, we had, you know, 1,000-pound squatter, you know, a couple 800-pound squatters, you know. All of us could bench over 600, one over 700, you know. You know, we had a really, really strong core group of people who not only were gifted, but who also showed up. Now, times were a lot simpler back then. You know, it wasn't married. There weren't any kids. You know, it was get done working, go to the gym, you know. But if it's important to you, you'll find a way to create that simplicity. You know, again, going back to why I built my home gym the way that I did was because I wanted to cut out at least that excuse of, well, I got to drive somewhere and train. Well, now you can just walk outside, you know. But I think, you know, and again, when I had my biggest numbers, I had a core group of guys who were really, really strong, but who showed up, you know. I'm thinking about the squat, like Saturdays are squat days. And I would drive 45 minutes to Roanoke, Virginia, get there about 10 o'clock. And we, you know, I'd sit there and eat my, you know, bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. And, you know, everybody's getting ready. And then we'd squat till about, you know, 1 or 1:30. Then we'd all go eat and then turn around and drive 45 minutes back home, you know. And that was an all day thing. That was an all day thing on Saturdays, but it was every Saturday. But that doesn't happen if those guys don't show up. You know, and so you're 100% on the fact that you got to have people who have the same values and who appreciate and who have the same dedication to what you're trying to achieve. And not just powerlifting, but sport in general, life in general. You know, if your spouse doesn't have the same vision for you, probably not going to be very successful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those deals where on certain lifts, you're willing to put yourself out there if you're by yourself to an extent. Bench press is one of those where you kind of hesitate to go a certain level of heavy when you're by yourself, just because if the fucking bar slips, you know, off goes your head type of shit. But
yeah.
On deadlift, you know,
I've had that happen. That's not fun.
No.
You know, but yeah, especially in powerlifting, if you're lifting in gear, like you have to have people there.
Yeah.
You have to have people to get you in the gear. You have to have people to set your shirt. You got to have people to spot. Otherwise, you can't do it, you know. And Like it does. Like, yeah, you might be the only guy on the platform at that moment, but there's a team, hopefully, of, you know, 5, 6, 7 people behind you who have helped you get there. Yeah. And I was having a conversation just yesterday with one of the guys that I lift with, you know, about some goals that I have still that I want to achieve. And, you know, the response was, you've got to create that consistency, meaning me, but then we as a group of guys who train with me have to commit to that too. Like it takes everybody because yeah, if you're attempting maximal weights, that'd be big weight, but because it's all relative, right? But
yeah,
if you're attempting maximal weights, you need to have the safety measures in place.
Yeah.
You know, like I've gotten really good at, I guess, finding cheats around certain movements. Like if I'm by myself, it'll be a half tilt squat. You know, if I'm by myself on the bench, I might do a dead press, or maybe it's a dynamic day, deadlifts, whatever, you know, but, or it might be a good morning, you know, for the lower body, or it might be a belt squat, you know. So you find ways around. You find ways around maybe getting in gear for that day, but like we talked about earlier, like at some point you gotta get in the gear. Sunday, a buddy of mine squatted at the house. He did a reverse band 925, like full gear, suit, knee wraps, everything. He can't do that by himself. There's no way. Like there are people I'm thinking like Blaine Sumner, I think maybe trains alone a little bit. And I'm sure there's other people out there that are going, yeah, well, you know, I've done this. That's fine. But as a general idea, like you need people there just to use the gear how it's meant to be used. Forget about the coaching aspect. Forget about, you know, actually watching and coaching you as you're lifting. You know, that's a whole different deal. But just, like I said, setting your bench shirt. Like, I can't. The new shirt, I could probably get in by myself and make it work. But I couldn't hand it off by myself. You know, squat suit. A single ply squat suit's a lot easier to get into than the newer canvases that are out there right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like you got to have a crew if you want to give yourself a chance. Yeah. And training partners. Yeah, you got to train partners.
Well, I've had the privilege to lift in your garage gym, home gym, whatever you want to call it, the shed, and, It's awesome, you know, and just the vibe, it's just different. And even the one time we lifted at, was it Scott's house?
Oh, like, yeah.
Like, it's just, things, like I hit a PR when we lifted at Scott's house, like a completely foreign place, but it was one of those deals where the vibe was right and you got the right people around you coaching you up, but also encouraging you. And you're like, oh shit, you hit a PR. And that's, you know, it's probably more often when that shit happens than not. Just because somebody's going to kind of pick you up or push you, you know, past that point of like comfort, you know, because when you start lifting relative heavy weight, you know, you get a little nervous. Shit scares you a little bit because you start potentially thinking about what could go wrong versus what will happen. And I think that's one of the next thing I want to talk about. You know, we've talked a lot about on the physical side of things, but the other side of lifting in general and you know, even with powerlifting is that mental side, like, you know, visualizing your success in the lift, visualizing your success on the platform, visualizing what it looks like to hit the movement you know, correctly, going over your cues in your head or however, you know, you sequence stuff. So, you know, you always like to say, get your mind right. And we've adopted that as our, you know, team slogan for the year. And it's all on our gear. So, you know, how do you get your mind right when it comes to your lifts and your big lifts?
Yeah, you know, when you get to a certain point, like, the lifts can be deadly. I mean, like, you know, they can kill you. And, you know, you don't really think about that, but that's the reality of it is, and that goes back to training partners and again, setting yourself up to have success, you know. But I think when you're talking about approaching big lifts, there was a picture that hung in the gym in my hometown from, I think, the first time I squatted 700. And my face was white with chalk. Like, I had, like, slapped myself in the face with chalk before I went and lifted. And then I, you know, lifted 700, whatever it was. And that picture was taken afterwards. You know, there was a lot of emotion, a lot of outward, I guess, display of machismo or whatever you want to call it. Compare that to the heaviest squat I've ever done. There was no production. There was no I guess wasted energy, because you know you're putting a small car on your back and trying to go down and up with it. You know, you got to make sure that everything is right. And what I mean by that is, you should have a checklist for each lift as you approach and as you get ready to do that lift. And so we'll just take the squat, for example, and we'll go through these pretty quickly, because you could have another episode just on kind of cueing and kind of what that is. But like for me, when I get under a squat bar, I'm making sure that my feet are set first, that the bar placement is second, and then my bracing is third. And so I'm going through those things, getting my feet set, getting under the bar. Is the bar set where I want on my traps or my hands? Can I get my hands in from outside the collars? You know, and then getting that brace, getting my core set to take that lift out. And then there's a whole nother set as you're doing the lift. You know, you talk about flaring your knees, but you know, all those things. Bench press, same thing. You know, there, you know, the other thing that I think really, I should have said this first is, you know, as a lifter, you should have a routine. You should have a routine going up to the bar for each lift. And so like for the bench, you know, it's always wrist wraps, chalk, shirt, belt if I have one, sit on the bench, couple deep breaths, lay back, and then you begin the setup of, you know, arching, you know, getting your feet set, getting your glutes set how you want it, squeezing your upper back, getting your hands set, deep breath, you know, breathe into your stomach, then the bar goes out, and now you do the lift. The deadlift is just whatever. I can't really talk on a deadlift. I just go up there and, you know, try not to embarrass myself too bad. But over time, you know, that's a routine. And so you really don't have to think about, okay, step one, step two, step three. It becomes just what you do. And again, tying this back, I know this is powerlifting, but I think it can tie back into sport, you know. You should have a pre-game routine. You should have a pre-practice routine. As a coach, you should teach your athletes do A, B, C, and D to get your mind right, to prepare for the task of whatever it is that you're trying to get done for that day. You know, if it's a, you know, first and 10, here's a routine. Third and short, here's a routine. Goal line, here's a routine. Fourth and one, here's a routine. I'm shooting free throws. Okay. What's my routine? Is it dribble the ball three times, three deep breaths? Is it, you know, whatever it is, those routines go a long way in creating success because it takes the thought out of it. And not that you go on autopilot, but that's kind of what it is. And so it just becomes what you do. And so you don't have to necessarily worry in a critical situation, do I know what I'm getting into or do I know what I have to do? It's just been done so many times that it's not, oh my gosh, it's a state meet. Oh my gosh, never been here. No, it's a bar and a rack and you've had a bar and a rack all year. This is how you approach the bar. It's not we're playing at AT&T Stadium. Oh my gosh. Look, no, it's the field's 100 yards. You've got an opponent. Here's how you play. So I think that goes a long way the further and further you get along experience, but also the further and further you get along in the season to giving your athlete success.
Well, I agree with you. You know, sometimes you can be the young kid that's too stupid to know any better, you know, when you get onto a big stage. But at the same time, if you're not following those routines and then something changes, I tell it like, you know, we're not going to lift in the same rack and the same kind of bar that we train with because I don't know the setup at this school. I don't know if they're going to rent out equipment from this company, you know, so I can't promise you, but I can tell you that 45 pounds is 45 pounds and the bar is going to be the bar. Chalk is chalk. You know, we're going to train and it doesn't matter where we compete. It's not going to be any different other than that. You know, that little boost of adrenaline when you're actually there. And that's the hard part to replicate for powerlifting in training, in my opinion. You know, it's the meet day itself is certainly something that it's hard. You just don't, especially if you've never competed before either. Like you don't understand the butterflies that are going to go through your stomach before you go lift and attempt. You know, you just got to make sure that one, you're going through the different commands so that you don't forget those. Cause that to me is one of the biggest things that I think coaches forget to address their kids on.
Yeah. But that's kind of practice how you play, right?
Yeah.
Like that's part of the job as a coach is you have to set them up for success. Prepare them and practice the commands. Practice, especially in high school, dude. I mean, you know, a high school powerlifting meet is chaos.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like it is 100% chaos. And it only goes up, you know, from regionals to state. I mean, the state meet is nuts. But again, you as a coach, you know, you should know what that's like. And so you have to prepare them prior to that. And when I say prior, I don't mean the week of or the night before. I mean, that should be part of your preparation the whole way. You know, that was one of my big things when I coached in college was I wanted my lifters to be independent. Too many times you see coaches running up and down. I got to rep this kid. I got to rep that kid. And yeah, it makes us feel good. And a lot of coaches wear it with a badge of honor. Like, man, I wrapped 15 kids today. Like, you know, that I've heard coaches say that. That used to be a thing, you know, but I always looked at it as when my lifters left, I wanted them to be able to compete on their own.
Yeah.
I wanted them to be able to wrap their knees or have somebody wrap their knees, put their shirt on, put their gear on. Because number one, there was only one of me and I didn't want to be the guy going back and forth doing all that.
Yeah.
But number two, like I wanted them to have some autonomy. Like I wanted, to me, that's how you learn.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I can hold your hand and do all this and do all, but you're not going to learn that way. And so I felt that that was vital for them in them learning the sport, because we, you know, when I took that over at VMI, they had powerlifting, I don't know, maybe a few years before I got there, but nobody there knew what powerlifting was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're starting from scratch, and I just felt like they needed to learn how to do it. And I had lifters go on and do some really, really cool stuff after that, you know, and I felt like a lot of that was, or at least I had a part in a lot of that, because they learned on the front end, in my mind, what was the right way to do it. So,
yeah.
But it goes back to, I think as a coach, you have to prepare them for that chaos. You have to prepare them for what that's going to look like. You know, again, give them a routine, you know, again, just, you know, just like in sport, in football, whatever, you know, you have a Monday routine, a Tuesday routine, a Wednesday, and a game day routine, you know, this is no different. You know, you have a, you know, a practice routine, you have a night before routine, you have a routine when you get there, you know, and just boom, 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 boom. And that way, when something does come up that gets a little hectic or does come up and it's unexpected, it doesn't throw you off because you're prepared for it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I had mentioned earlier about, you know, kind of where we put kids, obviously weight determines how much a kid weighs, determines what weight class they're in. But you have those kids that are kind of tweeners, right? They could potentially go up in weight class, or they could come down to a different weight class. And obviously their strength level in comparison to not just themselves, not just their teammates, but, you know, kids in the region. But, you know, for you and for the high school kid, where would you tend to err with kids when it comes to kind of sitting in the middle of a weight class where if they were to go down, maybe they stand a little bit better chance of placing versus if they stay where they're at, it's a little bit more of a dogfight?
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, what's the common answer? It depends, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors, I think, that go into that, especially at the high school level. You know, if it's the difference in them getting to go to regionals and not getting go to regionals, then I think you want to give them the best shot to do that, you know?
Yeah.
If they're already in and maybe it's a difference in a place or two here, you know, not podium, but just, you know, finishing a little higher, then, you know, maybe you don't, you know, I would guess that a lot of power lifters are also, you know, football players or other sport athletes. And so you got to look at, you know, does their weight cut affect, you know, what they're doing in their other sports? You know, how does that play into it? You know, if they're a freshman, you know, unless they got a chance to go to state, you know, I would argue they probably don't need to cut weight, period.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're freshmen, like, grow, you know, but but if you got a kid that has a chance to place, you know, if you got a kid that, hey, if you drop down a weight class, it might get you on the podium as opposed to maybe middle of the pack or less, then yeah, maybe you have that conversation. And, you know, I would obviously invite the parents to be involved in that, you know, because that, you know, that, you know, you're you know, touching on, you know, some different stuff there. But if it's like a sophomore kid who's middle of the pack, you know, tweener, you know, really isn't, then maybe you just stay there and tell them to get bigger, tell them to get stronger, you know. But if they have a chance to go to state, if they drop a weight class, and yeah, I'd probably do that. And then of course, if it's got, you know, but if you're at state, if you're already qualified, you know, and you got a chance to improve, I guess. If you drop a weight class and maybe it bumps you up 4 or 5 spots, you know, I don't know. That's a conversation I guess your coach and your family would have to have, you know. If you're a senior, you know, go for broke, you know, try to put yourself in the best position to place the highest you can.
Yeah.
But if you're below that, I would say probably not. I guess that would be maybe a good rule of thumb is that we're not going to make any weight changes unless A, you have a chance to get on a podium at state, or B, you're a senior and it's your last chance to place as high as you can.
Yeah. Well,
that might be a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Speaking of rules of thumb, you know, let's talk. We're at the meet, you know, you got to set your openers. Walk us through your mindset of how you would approach selecting an opener and then making those jumps through the attempts.
Oh, that's really good stuff. That's really good stuff. I'm different than a lot of people in that I'm always going to open to light. But I think you also have to open how you, or I'll say open, pick your attempts as to how you train. If you're used to making big jumps in training, then that's how you need to make your jumps during a competition.
So let's define. Yeah. Yeah. Define what you say big and versus small jumps?
Yeah. So, and again, obviously the stronger you are, the bigger jumps you can make, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Because absolutely.
It's a lesser percentage. So like when I hit my biggest squat, and this is easy because it's a nice round number, I went 88.5%, 96.5%, and then 100 of what I wanted, to hit for that day. So to put a number to it, those are ballpark numbers. Now, that's just how it happened. But I typically would make, you know, 60 to 90 pound jumps in the squat and training. Because we would go, well, really it got to the point in the squat where we would go, you know, 2 plates, 4 plates, 6 plates, and then 7, 8, 9, you know, whatever we were doing. So that wasn't an issue come meet time to go 885, not 65, 1,000, because I'm used to making those jumps. On the bench press, you get into smaller jumps, and I would say, you know, 25 to 50 pound jumps are not uncommon. You know, I'm thinking about my attempts in the last couple meets, you know, they were probably 25 to 40 pound jumps. You know, and then a deadlift, you just put whatever on, you got to pull to get the total you want. But another way to look at that was I would pick my opener that no matter what, on any given day, you know, you're sick, your dog died, you got in a wreck, whatever, you could do it on any given day. I wanted there to leave no doubt after you did that lift that it was a successful lift, because that sets the tone for the rest of that, for the rest of the attempts. That also, I mean, you know, cause I also judge if I see a lifter miss their first attempt, the next time they come up, I'm going to look that much more closely and watch them on their second and third attempt. just because of the simple fact that they missed their first attempt. Oh crap. You know, I gotta pay attention on their second and third. But if a kid comes up and buries a squat first attempt, they're going to have a little more leniency. I say leniency. I don't know if that's the right word, laxity. I'm not sure what the right word is. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on their second and third because they've demonstrated proficiency on that first attempt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, there's and I think I've told this story at some point, but 2006, we're APF Senior Nationals in Vegas. You know, big national meet. I mean, Louis, the West Side, everybody's there. I mean, it's enormous meet. PR my squat and get to the bench. And I had done a weight cut. First weight cut I had done didn't affect my squat at all. I didn't know it was going to affect my bench. So my opener set, you know, I mean, that's what I open up with. No big deal. I missed my opener. And this is in Las Vegas, you know, wife's out there, fiance's out there, you know, flew her out there. I've got family out there from Arizona, you know, again, you know, biggest meet I'd done up to that point, missed my opener. Boom, go back out, missed my second attempt. Now I'm sitting in the corner going, holy crap, you know, I just spent all this money and did all this travel out here to freaking bomb out at the biggest stage. Well, talk about getting your mind right. You know, I had a little talk with myself and a couple other people and, you know, on the inside, you know, went to a different place and was able to grind out that third bench and then ended up finishing the meet, got my first elite total. And that was, I think I placed fifth at that meet. And, you know, first nationals place, not too bad. But having to overcome those two misses on the bench was hard. I mean, it was really, really hard. And you know, I was, you know, 25 at that point. So, you know, I mean, I'm a lot older than a high school kid having to overcome, man, you know, I just missed my first two attempts, you know, because the first thing that happens is what? I'm not strong enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're like, man, the weight's too heavy. And then so you go down that road of self-doubt. But if you've been there and you know that, well, it's not too heavy, it's just it's a technical issue. You know, and so you got to fix your technique. Like that's different. Another example is we were doing rack pulls last week or whatever, and I missed the first one and I missed the second one. And I knew I was strong enough. It was a technique issue. And so you fix the technique and then boom, it goes up. But a high school kid maybe doesn't know that, right? As a high school coach, maybe you don't know that it's a technical issue. So to avoid all that, to avoid all that, set them up for success from jump so that they have success. You know, it goes back to not having any misses, you know, whether it's in your, and then trying to go 9 for 9 in the meet, right? You know, because you want to have that momentum of positivity. There's nothing worse than getting one squat, one bench, and maybe a deadlift in a meet, you know, because then you leave 33% success. That ain't good, you know, but going 8 for 9 or even 9 for 9 in a meet, then you leave feeling pretty good. You know, the other thing is, you know, try to leave some meat on the bone, you know, have them leaving the meet knowing they could have did more, especially at high school when you've got the meet week one, week two, week three, like you're going to a meet every week. Like if you blow it out meet one, where do you have to go? Meet 2, 3, or 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, treat those like practice. Treat them like practice. Let them get good at doing the technique and the lifts so that when they get a chance to go to regionals, when they get a chance to go to state, they know what that success is like. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I guess in summation, open to light, I would say probably 85%, you know, and then make the jumps that you're comfortable with, you know. And then set your athletes up for success. You know, if their best squat's 315 and you open up at 305, well, there's not a whole lot of room for error there.
Yep.
You know, a better example might be 275 and then go 305 and then maybe, you know, 325, you know, for a PR on the third. You know, the other thing that I would try to do is I would try to set myself to PR on the second attempt, you know, because then if you missed it, you got another chance to get it, still PR. But if you got it, then you could go for broke on the third. And that was kind of gravy on top of it.
Yeah. You know?
So that's the other piece to that is if you can, you know, try to give them two chances to hit that PR, you know, and that's knowing your lifters and that's knowing, you know, what they can do and kind of what they're capable of.
No doubt. Well, in the spirit of leaving a little bit of meat on the bone and never PR in a PR, I think we're going to kind of wrap it up here. I know there's so many other facets to powerlifting that we can dive down, and we'll certainly revisit some things in the future. You know, I know you'll be on the podcast for a fourth and a fifth and a hundredth time because, you know, you're the man. And you have a lot of wisdom to share. We greatly appreciate it, man. So if the people don't already know, where's the best place to find you and access this knowledge that you have?
I appreciate that. You're too kind, my friend. Twitter at Monty Sparkman, Instagram at Monty Sparkman. You know, those are probably the two best ways to get a hold of me. Just shoot me a message or whatever. And if I can help, you know, I've always said that I owe a lot to the people who have poured into me previously and continue to pour into me, you know, and so, you know, I feel like it's, you know, part of giving back, you know, and giving, sharing what's been given to me to pass on, you know. And so if I can add value to a program, if I can add value to a lifter or to a coach or whatever, then that's what I'm going to do. Just because, like I said, there's been so many great people who've done that for me. And, you know, if I can do that to somebody else and add value, then that's what I want to do. So reach out on social media. That's probably the best way. And if I can help, I'll be happy to.